T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
Gorgeous morning along Chicago's beautiful lakefront at Soldier Field. We get you set for Bears-Bengals. Snap is back, four-man rush, Dalton to throw. A conviction throw over the middle, on the post. Allen Robinson, touchdown! Touchdown, Bears! Andy Dalton takes the snap against a four-man rush. Tight pocket, begins to close. He ejects, runs right to midfield. 45-40, Montgomery with a block upfield, and out of bounds goes Andy Dalton. Dalton down on one knee, okay. Dalton may be dinged up here. Yep, Andy Dalton's dinged up. Out comes Justin Fields. Snap, Burrow takes turns, gives it to the belly of the back, and Mick getting in there in the backfield. Eddie Jackson, safety play right there is the kind we're talking about. Chopped him down well behind the line of scrimmage. Fourth and three, shotgun Burrow. A trips formation left. Back to his right is Mixon. One safety deep, back to throw. Burrow winds up, breaking out of top of the field. Phil Dorr breaks up the throw to Higgins. And the Bears will take over and down. Slots to the right, back to throw. Four-man rush. Pressure coming and hit. Dalton goes down, and it's Reeder again. Down to Mark Grody.
It is officially, guys, for Andy Dalton, a knee injury. His return is questionable today.
Snap back to Burrow. Pocket starts to close. Throws over the middle. T. Higgins. Eddie Jackson knocks it free. Ball scooped up by the Bears. Picked up and running right. It's to Sean Gibson. Gibson all the way down to the 40-yard line of the Cincinnati Bengals. Eddie Jackson on the forced fumble. Bears are in business. Snap to Burrow. Looking right. Throwing right. It's intercepted. Intercepted by Roquan. On his horse. 40. 30. 20. 10. 5. End zone. Touchdown. Touchdown, Bears. Pick 6. On a house call for Roquan Smith. Play fake to Mixon as he goes to throw. That's picked up by Jalen Johnson. Run it perfectly. Far side of the field. Jalen Johnson's taking one away. Back-to-back drives and an interception by this Bears defense. Fakes the handoff to Mixon with Ogletree in his face. It's intercepted. It's Blackson at the 10. Down to the 9. That is 3 consecutive interceptions. Snap. Here comes the blitz by Bates, and it's intercepted by Logan Wilson. 20, 15, 10. And he's brought down to the ground by Williams. A blitz you knew was coming delivers for the Bengals. Snap back to Burrow. Going to throw right into the end zone for the touchdown. T. Higgins on Kendall Vildor. And the Bengals are within 4. One more knee for Justin Fields and a backflip by Marquise Goodwin.
That's why.
To finish it. The exclamation point. Bears with a defensive gem. With 4 takeaways, 3 consecutive interceptions, including a Roquan Smith pick 6, hold off the comeback bid from the Bengals and win it 20-17 here at Soldier Field before a packed house, even at 1-1. Winning coach Matt Nagy as he emerges from Club Dub down in the locker room, my friend. I'm assuming we still do this. Is this true?
Oh, it's very true. Hey, you guys know it's so hard to win in this stinking league that when you win, man, you better celebrate.
Club Dub.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Victory Monday. We have a Victory Monday. It unfolded on the lakefront, and all is right in the world.
Morning, Molly.
David. How are you?
Happy Monday, a victory Monday. Yeah, you know, as Matt Nagy said, it's hard to win in this stinking league. So the Bears survived the Bengals a little bit closer than maybe we anticipated the way this game was going. The fourth quarter, a little more drama manufactured by the Bears than we would like. We will get to all of it, but the bottom line is the Bears bounce back. The defense looks very familiar and steals this football game, wins this football game, establishes itself, and resets the standard at Soldier Field. I think that was the biggest takeaway, was that this defense, with four takeaways, took that victory from the Bengals.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that today will be a positive day because I think there were definitely learning elements, but you get to do it after winning. And you get to kind of pick apart the game and talk about where things went a little bit awry, and they had a comfortable lead. The defense was back. The defense not overrated. The defense, the pressure on the quarterback. Again, that's not a great offensive line either. I didn't think they played particularly well, talking about the Bengals' offensive line. But the Bears did kind of put everyone on the edge of their seat, really for no reason at the end of the game, and we'll get into that. But the bottom line is they won. The defense looked good in doing so, and I think, you know, I don't want to say that we're seeing the emergence of a new star in Roquan Smith, because I think he's been a good player, but certainly getting a pick six, very meaningful stuff. The crowd out there, we haven't seen a crowd at Soldier Field, I mean, other than preseason games, since 2019, and I think that helped fuel the Bears. And I think it was really wonderful to see that many people really enjoying a game.
Well, I think you're exactly right. When you zoom back and before we dig into the details and you look at some of those aspects of the game and, you know, the offensive issues and the quarterback situation and certainly Roquan Smith's ascension, if not emergence, you look at the fan presence. That was different. That was fun yesterday. I was at Soldier Field and you just got this sense of anticipation that really you hadn't felt since December of 2019. And even then, it was maybe different because of what people really appreciated about being back at the football stadium and just being in that Bears environment. And people responded well. And I think everybody was sort of, you know, a little bit had some anxiety when they introduced the players at the beginning and what would be the first reaction to any sort of offensive struggles. But that was a Bears crowd, and it was really one I felt like supplied that atmosphere and adrenaline that you speak to, because the defense almost fed off it and it fueled this team, and it was a fun atmosphere.
And you mentioned the quarterbacks. That's the lead. You know, obviously Andy Dalton getting hurt in the game, hurt his knee. Apparently it was a weird injury because it was not a contact injury. It was kind of a White Sox running to first base injury. It was a guy that took off running and came up lame. And it's just an oddity, and he was uncomfortable. They took him out of the game. You know, we're going to get all the information. I would imagine not this morning. When Matt Nagy speaks, they just don't like to give out any information. We'll know by Wednesday how his knee is, and I'm being half facetious.
You're right, because he won't talk Wednesday.
Yeah, but you're right. But we will eventually get an update. We'll find out if Justin Fields had mixed results in his extended run. You know, made, you know, a fantastic play to recover his own fumble, which was really important in the game. And that had been his best play for a little bit. And then he had a huge third down run to get a first down and to keep the chains moving and kind of kill the game at the end. And you saw what makes him special in that moment. You also saw maybe why he hasn't been starting since the season began, because there were some uneven type things that went on. Now, you know, it didn't help that there was a drop and he didn't throw a touchdown, a terrible interception late in the game. What are you doing throwing in that situation? I think that there's a lot of questions that come up when you're talking about complimentary football and how to put a game away. But all in all, they end up winning the game, and that's what we're focusing on. And I know there'll be a lot of people really pleased that Justin Fields played as well as he did, and maybe will be the starter at Cleveland. Not a very great place to go, and they got some pass rushes there. So we'll stay on top of the story, and we'll work the quarterback angle. But I don't know if we can call it an ascension for Justin Fields, but certainly more playing time.
Well, certainly more playing time, and he's got to improve, because I think that if you're looking at it objectively, and I think that's – I say that because it's not always assumed that people are going to objectively describe what they see when it comes to Justin Fields. There's so many people, fans and media alike, cheering for this guy to play so badly they want to overlook some of the shortcomings. But I think, number one, objectively, he struggled. It was a shaky home debut. He did show some things that reminded you of why he's going to be a special player. That 10-yard run on 3rd and 9 was probably a microcosm of all the excitement that he brings, because it was manufactured with his athleticism, his legs. But there were other times, probably more often than not, where he struggled in the pocket. You know, all of his passes were in the pocket. Now, you can blame the play calling if you want. We'll get into that. But this was a rookie quarterback in his first extended action, really reminding everybody that he is a rookie quarterback. And there are reasons that were contributing to why the Bears were being as patient as they were being. The offense functioned more efficiently with Andy Dalton. The offense is more explosive with Justin Fields. Those two things aren't always compatible, but that is the reality of yesterday if you're looking at it without blinders on.
Yeah, and I think that you can realistically ask yourself not whether Fields is ready, but whether the play caller, Matt Nagy, is ready for Fields. And I think that when we think about the game plan necessary to take advantage of all the things he can do, does Matt Nagy want that? Does he want to call plays in that fashion? Is he willing to sort of shift out of whatever mode he's in and go to sort of a game plan that you saw from Bill Lazor at the end of last year? Move the pocket. You know, you can't leave him as the target standing there. When you move the pocket, you also change you limit the number of reads he has to do as he's moving to one side or other of the field. Running the football. They didn't do that as much as they needed to put that game away. And you know, it was extraordinary to see the Joe Burrow performance, where the guy yes. actually threw three consecutive interceptions on three plays, then came back and threw two touchdowns. It you know, thank God he didn't get the chance to throw the last one at the end of the game, because
no kidding.
It felt like it just felt so weirdly kind of random the way he was throwing the football. And they made a couple good plays on him. I'm not saying it was all that he was bad or anything, but I think you saw a team that was struggling to win as much as the Bears were struggling to hold on to a lead.
Well, I think also, yeah, Joe Burrow, as polished as he is and as poised as he was coming into Sunday's game, and we talked about it all week, but he did look confused at times, and that led to a couple of his bad throws on these interceptions, and that's a credit to Sean Desai. You have to give credit where it's due in that Bears defense for disguising coverages and for making plays on the football. When it comes to Justin Fields, Mully, though, you're exactly right, and that's the crux of what we'll talk about. You know, he threw, I think it was 13 passes, but they were all in the pocket. And as a play caller, as an offense, now you've got to shift from what you were planning to call on your play sheet, Matt Nagy. And I think this shows you how much they were planning to stick with Andy Dalton. And when you look at their inability to improvise when Justin Fields took over, you can't really, to oversimplify, you can't really plan on asking him to think as much as react. And when you're in the pocket, asking him to process everything, you know, move the pocket, call some things that they didn't call that take advantage of his skill set, that's the next step if indeed Justin Fields is going to be the guy that plays against the Browns.
And I think that it was interesting, before the game even began, Ian Rappaport released a thing saying that, wow, you know, Justin Fields is running wow plays. Wow. Everybody in practice is saying, wow, look at that play. They got the special plays lined up for Justin Fields, and he's wowing everyone the way he runs them. And I'm watching that game, and it's getting, you know, you're waiting for a play, and I kept thinking to myself, where's the wow? Why aren't they running the wow plays? I thought they had wow plays. And maybe it doesn't work in quite the fashion that they had in mind in terms of the way they were using him. I just was confused as to why we didn't get the wow.
Well, you know what? I think that's a really good observation. And then it just reinforced what I thought when I heard the report in the first place. Somebody's trying very, very, very hard at Hallis Hall to convince people that this kid, number one, is looking good in practice, and number two, that this is coming. They're kind of laying the groundwork, setting the stage, quietly whispering to national reporters that, boy, you should see Justin Fields. He may not have looked like you thought he would in limited action, five snaps, but we see it every day. He's coming. Get ready. And then we're ready. Okay, you leaked your information. Now let's see it. And then we don't see it. Then we see 13 passes from the pocket. If you're going to have a talent like his, you've got to know how to use it. So that is the next phase for this Bears offense.
Yeah, it was really something to watch this unfold. And in fact, it was the football Sunday itself. The Bears sit alone in first place in the division because the Vikings start 0-2. They fell 34-33 to the Cardinals. And you saw the tonight will be the Lions against the Packers. I think we should all cheer for a draw. That way the Bears are alone in first place. I don't know that we could get one. But it'll be very interesting to just see what the Packers look like, quite frankly. I think that's the story, is how Rodgers looks and how they bounce back. So that'll be a fun one to keep an eye on in the division.
Without a doubt, you want to see from week one to week two, as you said last week, that's when you see the biggest growth. Yesterday we saw that defensively. We saw that with Sean Desai, frankly.
Yep.
Tonight, you have to think that, unless we're going to be totally bamboozled, that the Packers are going to improve and look like the team that you expected to see in week one against the Saints, who laid an egg against Carolina. The NFL is crazy yesterday, but the Packers, I think tonight, their goal has to be to kind of reinforce this idea that they are the front runners in the NFC North. But, hey, right now, the Bears are the only team in the division with a victory, so celebrate it while it lasts.
And this station right here, that's where you can listen to that game. We will be carrying the Packers against the Lions, so this is the place to be. We've got so much to get into. We've got the 5 at 5. We're going to pick apart all the big stories of the week and all the big stories from the big game. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
What did you make of the difference in the Bears' defense from week one to week two? Do you credit defensive coordinator Sean Desai, players tapping into energy of the crowd, or professional pride from a group that embarrassed itself at the LA Rams?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a collection of all of the above. I would say that all those things came into play. Sean Desai did a really good job. He had some really good things that he did. I thought you saw at one point they had both Mac and Quinn on the same side. That was clever, and it really led to a sack. So you had a defensive coordinator sack and a couple of other ones. I thought that Mac kind of was the disruptive force that you want to see. Quinn obviously played better. You know, Akeem Hicks is a monster, and he's always playing well. And I think that that Roquan, same thing could be said of him. You know, that both of those guys played well in both games. But I really am hoping that Eddie Goldman gets back. I think they need him. I think that would be an improvement. But I liked what, for the most part, what Sean Desai did. I think that you got to be worried about Kendall Vildor because of the end of the game. Just didn't seem like he closed it very well. But we knew that going in. We knew there were issues with the cornerback position. Jalen Johnson jumped a route. He had a good game for himself. There was one play where a guy ran clear past him. Had that pass been accurate, we might be having a different conversation this morning, but it was out of bounds, so we'll let it go. I thought the energy of the crowd, the way they played defense, I don't think we're calling them overrated this morning. They showed some pride, and the coordinator did great.
I think the crowd was great. The energy was obvious. The atmosphere and the excitement was palpable. But I'll say this. The Bears could have played the Bengals, and that defense could have been in front of no fans, COVID style, last year, 2020 version. They could have been on a back lot at a high school field, and I think they would have come out motivated to not embarrass themselves again. And I think the embarrassment against the Rams, giving up 34 points on national television, that left a feeling that stuck there in their craw all week long. I mean, Akeem Hicks afterward talked about getting home at 5 in the morning and being tired, but also being ticked off. Roquan Smith, Tayshaun Gibson, the veterans we heard from after the game referenced everything that they had heard about all week long about what the defense didn't do against the Rams and how bad they were. Eddie Jackson, I even think, was chirping off the field about something like, I thought that, you know, I was gone or I was done. Well, he wasn't, and they aren't. So this defense, I think it was an appeal to the professional pride. Sean Desai deserves credit too, because he was a first-time defensive coordinator calling his signals against Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay. That's a bad first start, and it reflected that. But he grew as well, as you point out, Mully, some good examples about the way he mixed things up, not only just up front, but in the secondary. Joe Burrow, as polished as they come among young quarterbacks, looked a little bit confused and off. And how often do you see a quarterback throw 3 consecutive passes that are all interceptions? That's rare, and it was a rare bonus to see the Bears defense play up to the standard that they used to meet regularly but hadn't met often enough. But it's back up there now, so now the pressure is on them to continue to play at that high standard.
Professional pride, for sure. That was what it was all about. You know, we do have, and we're all guilty of it, especially I'll say I'm really guilty of it, the overreaction Mondays when they lose a game. But they were really bad. I don't think we overreacted. I don't think Michael Lombardi was wrong to say on his Wednesday regular hit that they're the most overrated defense in the NFL. And if that clip got played, if that tweet was viewed and consumed by the Bears, it's good. Good kudos. We'll add Michael Lombardi into finger pointing and name calling as another reason to why this defense stepped up. Whatever it took, more of that, please, a week from yesterday. Because I'll tell you what, the Browns are going to run the ball. They're going to try to run the ball. That front group, which was, I think, the key to the defense, the front four, front five-ish of the Bears, that group is going to have another really good game again next Sunday in order for the Bears to do this again, because they are going to try to run the ball down your throat. So, you know, the old shirts in, jocks tight, socks tall, boys.
Dumb penalties, guys. I mean, I'm all in on the defense. I thought they were great. I thought they won the game. but a couple of really dumb penalties in the course of that.
Without a doubt. And that's what Matt Nagy addressed afterward, because Robert Quinn, Tayshaun Gibson. I didn't like the Quinn one because you could see he kind of threw the shoulder in intentionally. Just get away from the quarterback. Tayshaun Gibson, I don't know. It's like in baseball, they let a lot go now with the bat flips and the celebrations. Why are they trying to crack down on taunting suddenly?
Scoreboard update.
From the Northwestern Football Update Studio, I'm Dustin Rhodes. Here's what's happening. The Bears won the turnover battle 4-1. It equaled a Bears win 22-17 against the Bengals at Soldier Field. We saw Andy Dalton go out. We saw Justin Fields come in. He did well enough to help the Bears get their first victory of the year. The Bears are at the Browns next Sunday at noon. The Browns are favored by 7.5, and the story this week will be Andy Dalton's health. Other games of note, the Vikings start the year off 0-2, falling 34-33 to the Cardinals. And later on tonight, right here on the Score, the Packers will be hosting the Lions on Monday Night Football. White Sox magic number down to 4. They were 7-2 winners on Sunday over the Rangers. Lucas Giolito got the win. The Cubs 6, Brewers 4 on Sunday. Patrick Wisdom, a 2-run home run. It's his 27th, setting a new record for Cubs rookies. The Cubs off today before hosting the Twins starting on Tuesday. The Wildcats host Rutgers, Iowa, Purdue, and more this fall. Buy the tickets. NUSports.com.
Well, that's a good question.
How would you evaluate Justin Fields' home debut, and what do you think of the notion that Fields playing sparked the defense or the offense, as some of the post-game questions implied?
I chuckled at that. I thought it was ridiculous. Look, Justin Fields is going to be a star. I will maintain that. I will continue to repeat that, because I do think he's capable of being that player. But let's face it, yesterday was shaky. Yesterday was a tough day for a young rookie, and he's going to have those days and more to come. There's going to be high moments. There's going to be lows. Yesterday was a mixture of both, but probably more negative than positive. He got into the game, and people were relieved to see him, but let's not overstate what he accomplished and what he didn't, because I think that he's got a long way to go. If you want to stick with Matt Nagy's comparison to a chess piece, too often he put himself in check, and he put himself in situations that I think he'll learn to avoid. He didn't show that kind of command, I think, and a lot of that could be play calling, but he had two of those false start penalties, which he'll get better with over time. He had the delay of game, which is about game management, and you know, he had the one fumble recovery, which came from turning the ball over. It was a strip sack. You can't really do much about that if your offensive line won't protect you. But that was a turnover, and then the unacceptable interception. I mean, you can't call that play in that circumstance, but you can't throw that pass and be fooled the way that Justin Fields was fooled with 3 minutes and 50 seconds left to go in the game. So there was some good. The 10-yard scamper on 3rd and 9 is going to be the play you want to focus on and build off of. You've got to call the plays around his skill set. But there was also a lot to learn from and grow from. But you had to start somewhere, and I think that people were excited to see him in the game for his home debut that I think will go down as a shaky one.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. I think clearly when you heard some of the questions in the postgame, he sparked the media, no doubt about that. He got the media fired up. I think that's the best I can give him. Look, the fact of the matter is, it was really uneven. I mean, look at his numbers. They were awful. I mean, it was just not, you know, maybe he should have had a touchdown. The thing I like about passer rating is that it punishes you for interceptions. So he was punished for that interception. My takeaway watching Justin Fields play is that Matt Nagy is the wrong play caller for the guy. I just didn't see an understanding of what you have with Justin Fields from Matt Nagy. I didn't see the sort of things that I think you need to be able to do for him to be successful. That tells me that they don't have any idea how to use him, frankly. And I think he'll be a lot better when he actually gets reps against a live defense, when he has a week to prepare. I think if he has a week to prepare, it'll be a different performance. But that goes for the coaching staff as well. And that goes for the play caller. If this is indeed the changing of the guard, and if indeed he is now the starter, and I don't know that that's accurate, then you're going to have to figure out how to call plays that work for him. You got to get on the phone or just get in the tape room and find out what the hell the Baltimore Ravens do. Because they had another great win last night, and they came back from 11 down, and they have a quarterback that is kind of similar. I mean, you need to change the way you call the game. You need to get him out of the pocket. You need to take advantage of his mobility. You need to limit the decision-making. There are 1,000 good things that will come from doing that. I feel like just go back and get the tape of what we talked about with Mitch and run it again. Because we haven't seen this ability to take advantage of what you have as a quarterback. It's not about the scheme. It's not about what works for you. It's about what works for him. It's about taking a guy who I think we all believe is going to be a hell of a player and putting him in the best position to win. And I don't think we saw enough of that when he played yesterday.
All I know is that at about 10 minutes to 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon, the Bears were victorious at their home debut. So I think Justin Fields did just enough for them to win the game, and he almost did just enough for them to be put in a position where you were holding your breath. But at the end of the day, as David mentioned, he had that big run on the 3rd and 8, and that really did seal the victory. That was, at that point, you knew. I'm on the edge of my seat for every Bears game, every snap, especially every offensive snap. I am into that game. I am watching full eyes, all my efforts, just looking to see what they are doing. So as much as I think it is a decent argument that because Justin Fields is running scout team all the time and then he goes through all the offensive plays after practice with Coach Flip, but with as he put it, a practice squad wide receiver that he's throwing to, a backup's backup, I think Nagy gets a little bit of a pass here that he's so worried about the plays that he's calling for Andy Dalton that he wasn't prepped. And he'll learn from this. As much as Fields is going to learn from this first time, I think Nagy's going to learn from it. And I guess it shouldn't be a learning process, but Nagy's really, if you really think about it, if you're really honest with yourselves, Nagy's never really been a play caller. He was a play caller for a first half of football to the Tennessee Titans against the Titans in the playoffs with the Chiefs, and they had to take it away from him. So, you know, his play calling is a little bit overrated in his own mind. He thinks of himself a little better of a offensive coordinator play caller than he really is.
Well, there's a lot there, but that's going to be a major problem if that's the case, because that's how he defines himself. Play caller first, head coach next. Dustin. They drafted the guy in April. If he's not prepared for Justin Fields to go into the game to start the second half, he doesn't have a play sheet for him because he designed the game plan for Andy Dalton, what have they been doing for 4 months?
I don't disagree. I just think that's the crutch potentially. I just think if we get a full week, if when they get back to work for good, for real on Wednesday, I don't think anything we hear today will really define it, set the compass per se. But if we know on Wednesday that Fields is the starter for week 3 and Nagy's going to know that he's the I want to see that with a week of preparation. I'm at least willing to give Nagy that length of rope because they won the game. Had they lost the game, I'd be killing him. But they won the game. They did enough. He won the game with his legs. At the end, when they had the 3rd down and 8, he got 10 yards with his legs. They won the game. Let's see what it looks like with a full week of Nagy and Fields working together to prep for an opponent.
He didn't want to run the ball on 3rd down in the series before, and that led to an interception and a touchdown, and you biting your fingernails at the end of the game there, buddy. If you didn't see that, if you run the ball there, they have to burn a timeout. You punt the ball. Your defense had dominated the game. Obviously, you thought Kendall Vildor was going to trip and fall. That could have been a lot easier than it was.
I'm taking a little bit of time here to say this because I know that these questions could go on and on each and every day.
How bad do you sense Andy Dalton's knee injury is? How should the Bears handle the situation? Should they wait as long as possible to announce plans for a starter or remove doubt early in the week so everybody who needs to know knows?
I have no idea how serious the knee injury is. They didn't really tell us a lot about it. Watching it, you know, a guy just jogging down the field? I know he was sprinting. But does that pop an ACL? Does that pop an MCL? I mean, it's very difficult for me to make that determination without looking at the MRI, just by my naked eye. But, yeah, he clearly hurt himself. He clearly had to leave the field. The coach said that he was going to be the backup if anything had gone awry with Justin Fields. I guess David Montgomery then was the third-string quarterback. We found that little piece of information out. But, I really can't make – I can't answer this question without more information, and I would suspect that's what they want. They want less information. They want to keep everything sort of I would be surprised if they let us know early in the week who's playing quarterback. I think their dream is to make this opponent try to prepare for two guys.
And I was surprised sitting there post-game, Mully, when Matt Nagy was asked directly about the ACL report, and he basically dismissed it. I don't want to say dismissed it, but downplayed it and said, hey, he didn't think so. Before the MRI, before the X-ray, Dr. Nagy declared that it wasn't necessarily an ACL thing. That may come back, and then he backtracked a little bit. We don't know. There's mystery surrounding it. But I'll say this. I mean, if the Bears are looking for a reason to start Justin Fields against the Browns, this provides one. I also don't know if they feel like, you know, the stability that Andy Dalton frankly provided, if people want to be, again, objective and look at this with their head and not necessarily lead with their heart. Andy Dalton ran the offense pretty well. They only had 7 points, but this was an efficient – he completed 9 of 11 passes, and he definitely made some plays with his feet too. That's how he got hurt. It was oddly going out of bounds. So Andy Dalton did nothing to lose his job. Even though he is, you know, the most unpopular quarterback in town as the starter and everybody would love to see him replaced, he didn't really lose it based on the way he played. He got injured, and I think that they will milk this as long as they can, and they probably should. To whatever degree NFL coaches value the secrecy around who's starting, the Bears are going to take full advantage of that this week.
Yeah, I think the Bears love the secrecy aspect of it. And David, great point about the maybe unearthed or unknown athleticism of Andy Dalton. I mean, Andy Dalton had a couple. He had two really good runs before he got hurt. And I almost thought it was more of an ankle. That's what it looked like on television. I mean, I'm no doctor, yep. Even though my initials are DR. I am no doctor. But it looked to me like it was more ankle than knee when he – and if he was able to go back into the game with an emergency, you're right. He did not do anything by his performance – to make you think that he would be benched. And I don't know that Fields played all that well enough to overtake him. Like, his performance was so dominating that it was crystal clear that the Bears scored one touchdown on offense on Sunday. And it was off of the scripted plays that they probably ran 101 times over the course of a week. And good, it worked. Like, that's what we wanted to see. I predicted 5 field goals in that game. They had one offensive touchdown, and it was led by Andy Dalton.
It's an excellent question.
I thought your DR was for your PhD in politeness.
What do you make of the Las Vegas bookmakers installing the Browns as a 7.5-point favorite over the Bears next Sunday in Cleveland? What does Vegas know that wasn't obvious at Soldier Field yesterday?
Boy, I was surprised at this a little bit. Only because, not because of the Bears' victory, but that's a big number. And the Browns are injured. I think the Browns, you look at their receiving core, and Jarvis Landry left with a knee. You don't know about Beckham, if he's going to be available. How about Baker Mayfield? Did you see that? Dislocated his shoulder, comes back, and tries to make a play on an interception return. Bottom line is they look a little bit injured. They are definitely compromised at the receiver position, and the Texans gave them all they could handle. Game that maybe the score indicates it was a little bit wider than it might have been. So not a lot of faith in the Bears, I suppose. I guess that's the way to interpret it. But the Browns also are one of the trendy preseason favorites in the AFC or teams in the AFC, and maybe that carries over a little bit. I just think it reflects as much of a lack of confidence in the Bears and a reminder that, you know what, they won and it is Victory Monday and we are celebrating, but it's still the Bengals.
Yeah. Again, the line is established to encourage gambling. So I believe giving the hook is meant to get Bear fans on board. But I don't know if that, given the hook, is what should scare Bear fans off, because clearly this looks like a another line that the Bears can stay close. Surely they can keep close, and then you want to jump in and you want to make a wager on that. And, it might be a smart thing to do if indeed their quarterback is compromised, but I feel like it's a little bit of a setup. And I think that Vegas knows that not everyone was overly impressed with the Bears' performance at Soldier Field. So therefore, they throw in not just 7, but the hook, and that is to encourage people to get over that. So I think it's more about reading the betting public than it is the reality of who's hurt or who's ready to go or anything along those lines.
I think they've made a critical mistake here. If you really pay attention to the guys that come on this show and talk about the betting number, it's all about shopping and getting that best number. You know, Fortenbaugh, Kostos, Ostrowski, this number is not going to get any better. So if you're a Bears fan or a Bears believer, like, take the 7.5, because that number is going to go in the other direction. Without a doubt in my mind, I would be shocked. I think this could move 2 full points. I think this will be like 5.5-ish by the time we get to kickoff on Sunday. And I'm guessing that at many places, I haven't done the research yet, I'm guessing at many places this number is probably not even available because of the fact that we don't know who's going to play quarterback for the Bears, and the Browns have a serious wide receiver issue as we start the show today.
I'm struggling how to answer that one.
Are you good with the White Sox only winning 2 of 3 games at Texas? With the magic number at 4, when do you anticipate the White Sox clinching? Will it happen at Detroit? Should it already be done?
I vowed that I was going to be okay with winning 2 of 3. Then I watched that series over the weekend, and I bit through my lower lip the minute they tied the game. They gave it back up, and they lost a 1-run game to a bad team. They've been doing that. It's just disappointing. Lance Lynn pitched well enough to win. He wasn't booed off the mound, Garrett Cole. So let's just say that he moved back up in the Cy Young ratings. I vowed I wasn't going to get upset that they were winning 2 of 3 was something good, but after losing to the Angels, I was disappointed that they lost the 1 game. So I'm not going to pretend like all is well. It should have happened already. It's been a really weird year for the White Sox. I hope that they're not going to make a quick exit from the playoffs, but I have my doubts.
They lost a 2-1 game. They lost a close game. Lynn pitched fine. I understand why everybody's greedy. They want the sweep, but I would not look at 2 out of 3 from the Rangers as a bad thing. I would not look at them leaving Texas feeling disappointed. I think I'm here to cheer you up. This is a team that, after the loss, kind of talked a good game yesterday after bouncing back. Lucas Giolito talked about, you know what, they need to avoid the issues that plagued them last year when they took their foot off the gas. That's why Ricky Renteria had to go, right? Because of what happened in mid-September of 2020. Well, here we are, and the White Sox are comfortably ahead. And they took 2 out of 3 from a bad Rangers team, but they look good in doing it on Friday and Sunday. When Tim Anderson plays, it's a different team. I mean, I think you can look at that. When Tim Anderson's in the lineup, this is a team, that's when you evaluate them. Dylan Cease, pretty sharp on Friday night after a tough first inning. Lucas Giolito, you liked what you saw yesterday because he's getting playoff sharp. So is the White Sox mentality. I think that's the takeaway. They're going to go into Detroit. The magic number is 4, and I think they're going to celebrate by the time they leave Motown.
Well, I'll answer the part of the question that hasn't been answered necessarily yet, and that is that, yes, I think they should have already clinched by now. I think that's the one thing, and I guess it doesn't matter because they're going to be in the postseason. That's all that matters is that they're going to be in the postseason, and that's what's most important. So by tomorrow, by this time tomorrow, the magic number could be 1. Cleveland is at Kansas City for two. So I guess go Royals if you're a fan of the team at 35th and Shields. And then you have the White Sox hopefully taking care of their own business. If I was going to be upset about anything, this won't surprise anybody. Did Lucas Giolito need to throw 97 pitches yesterday in order for them to win a game? 97. I'm holding on to this thing. And then on the broadcast, they're even talking about the last time he threw 100, and then he had to go on. He had to take some time off at 97 pitches. But I think, David, you make the reason for White Sox fans not to be concerned is I think when Tim Anderson is in the lineup every day, the team is clearly different, and he's going to be in the lineup every single day. I mean, also yesterday, the two guys didn't play yesterday either. Right? Jimenez got the day off. Mercedes got the day. Or not Mercedes. Gosh, the round mound of pound. How did I get to the round mound of pound like that?
Wow.
Robert got the day off yesterday. So two guys got the day off that will be in the lineup all the time. The biggest, if you're upset about anything this morning, White Sox fans, is that you haven't clinched and that Rodon is going tonight. You got to keep your eyes on that after Giolito threw 97 pitches. So I'm still worried about the health of this starting staff.
Okay.
If they could clinch, then maybe we could move on from that worry. I mean, good God, this is just getting tiresome waiting. You're right, Dustin. That's the big question. All right. 312-644-6767. It's Victory Monday. How enthused are you with the victory that they had? It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.